Muito bom dia a todos. Senhor Vice-Presidente da Assembleia Parlamentar do Conselho da Europa, Senhor Representante Especial do Secretário-Geral do Conselho da Europa para as Migrações e os Refugiados, Senhoras e Senhores Oradores, Senhoras e Senhores Deputados, Minhas Senhoras e Meus Senhores, Portugal, que aderiu ao Conselho da Europa em 1976, poucos meses decorridos sobre a vigência da Constituição, fundadora do nosso regime democrático, tem sido, ao longo do tempo, um membro empenhado e participante do Conselho da Europa e da sua Assembleia Parlamentar. É, pois, com muita honra e muito agrado que a Assembleia da República acolhe esta iniciativa, de grande atualidade para todos os Estados-membros e para Portugal em particular, ao longo da sua história, nação de imigração e hoje também país com largas comunidades imigradas. Não é possível pensar a Europa sem pensar nas diásporas, com que levou a sua cultura a outros continentes e abriu caminho à construção de novos Estados e nações. Assim foi connosco, com o Brasil, em África e em Timor. Assim foi com outros Estados europeus, nas quatro partidas do mundo e não apenas os antigos impérios coloniais. Pelo seu bem-estar, pela humanidade do seu modelo social, a Europa e, de modo especial, a União Europeia, são hoje um magnete de esperança para muitos que procuram uma vida melhor, fugindo da miséria ou da guerra, desafiando a dor e a morte, criando comunidades nelas instaladas e que se desenvolveram em diásporas. Diásporas que não são, todavia, apenas extracomunitárias. Elas são também intra-União e dimensão indissociável das quatro liberdades da União. Não surpreende, pois, a atenção com que Portugal segue as negociações do Brexit e a reiteração que faz daquele princípio basilar. O lema da conferência menciona acertadamente as diásporas no plural. Estas não são, de facto, uma realidade única e estática. Abrangem realidades diferentes nas causas, no tempo e na tipologia. Na sua raiz, a palavra remete para a ideia de dispersão, de disseminação. No início foi-lhe associada a noção de movimento forçado, hoje alargada a um quadro mais abrangente de situações. Subjazem-lhe sempre várias ideias. A ideia de identidade e pertença, com a pátria de origem, enquanto indivíduos e enquanto comunidades. A sua integração nos países de acolhimento, na primeira geração e nas seguintes, que leva à construção de novas identidades, onde a memória coletiva convive com a realidade local em que se integram. De tal é testemunho a vida associativa, quantas vezes tão rica e capaz de atravessar gerações, potenciadoras das redes das respectivas diásporas, potenciadoras e estruturadoras do relacionamento entre os indivíduos com a pátria de origem e entre eles. Também a ideia de heterogeneidade, pois que são tantas as exigências a vencer da aprendizagem do novo idioma, da culturação, de integração e de aceitação por quem recebe. A ideia de mobilidade espacial, sem dúvida, mas também de mobilidade social, na esperança de uma vida melhor. Todos estamos cientes da geração de externalidades positivas no mercado de trabalho e de capitais com que os migrantes contribuem para o progresso material dos países de acolhimento. Nos casos, e permanecem a maioria, da imigração não qualificada, a integração mede-se pela capacidade de acesso dos descendentes da primeira geração a trabalhos mais qualificados que os dos seus progenitores. Para tal é decisiva a frequência do ensino, ensino secundário, ensino superior. Este é um desafio que impende não apenas sobre quem emigra, mas igualmente sobre quem recebe. Nada há de pior do que o isolamento e a exclusão. A história ensina-nos os perigos do racismo e da xenofobia. Não surpreende, pois, que condenemos firmemente a violência dos supremacistas brancos na Virgínia e noutros estados dos Estados Unidos. Se a realidade é outra, certo é igualmente que a Europa pode melhorar em muitas frentes a luta contra a xenofobia, quantas vezes alimentada por discursos radicais, abrigados sob a capa do nacionalismo anti-Europa. As diásporas são muito mais que movimentos de populações. São um fator de enriquecimento cultural, de pluralidade nos países de acolhimento e de origem. Também por isso merece uma atenção especial o acompanhamento e pertença pelas segundas gerações, o seu apego à comunidade de origem, em paralelo, em miúdo, com a sua condição de cidadãos dos estados onde nasceram. Estas são elementos constitutivos das diásporas, todavia não são estáticos. Todos estamos cientes do impacto do transporte aéreo nas últimas décadas, que encurtou distâncias. Se tal foi já uma profunda mudança na vida das comunidades migrantes, pela facilidade na preservação dos laços com a pátria de origem, bem maior é hoje o impacto da sociedade do conhecimento e da comunicação em rede. Longe vão os tempos dos serviços postais, como básicos. Com a net, a interação entre pessoas é imediata, no som e na imagem. São também mais amplos os meios de informação através das comunidades virtuais. Também o sentido das correntes migratórias muda. Basta pensar, no caso do nosso país, Portugal, que o Brasil, país para onde tantos portugueses emigraram, é hoje pátria de origem da maior comunidade estrangeira emigrada em Portugal. O mesmo sucede com a sua estrutura. É cada vez mais comum o fenómeno de imigração de trabalhadores qualificados. Assim sucedeu com os portugueses nos anos que seguiram à crise de 2008-2009 e ao seu impacto em Portugal. É também crescente a apetência seletiva pelos Estados de recepção por este tipo de imigrantes. Este fenómeno, se não for compensado pelo efeito de circulação, pode redundar num brain drain, sobretudo enfraquecendo os países menos desenvolvidos. Para que a circulação de cérebros seja positiva, é necessário que todos, países de origem e países de acolhimento, beneficiem de forma equitativa e comparável da mobilidade. Outro tanto, convém não esquecer os efeitos do envelhecimento demográfico, quer para o país de envio, que perde população, quer para o país de acolhimento, onde a imigração pode ter um efeito retardador, embora não comatando no longo prazo as consequências económicas e sociais da quebra de fertilidade. Não são, todavia, apenas negativas as externalidades das diásporas. Elas têm também um impacto positivo a vários níveis, na difusão da imagem do país de origem junto do país de acolhimento, no envio de remessas e divisas, no conhecimento tecnológico, no relacionamento entre culturas, no potencial de constituição de projetos empresariais, sobretudo nos casos dos profissionais qualificados imigrados. Estima-se, aliás, que 90% resida nos Estados-membros da OCDE. Minhas senhoras e meus senhores, com o lançamento da Rede Parlamentar sobre Políticas das Diásporas, a Assembleia Parlamentar do Conselho da Europa dá um novo testemunho da sua vitalidade e do seu empenho em contribuir ativamente para as finalidades do Conselho. Lembro que já em 2004, a Comissão Permanente da Assembleia Parlamentar, agindo em nome desta, adotou uma recomendação sobre as culturas da diáspora e que também o Centro Norte-Sul do Conselho da Europa vem prosseguindo uma ação meritória neste campo. Faço votos para que esta nova iniciativa seja produtiva e para que as reflexões da rede parlamentar nos ajudem a melhor compreender esta realidade tão complexa. Bem-vindos a Lisboa, bem-vindos a Portugal e bom trabalho. Muito obrigado.
Monsieur le Président de l'Assemblée de la République, Mesdames, Messieurs, chers orateurs, mes chers collègues, c'est un immense honneur pour moi d'ouvrir cette conférence en compagnie de Monsieur le Président, dédiée au lancement du réseau parlementaire sur les politiques relatives aux diasporas. Permettez-moi tout d'abord de remercier au nom de l'Assemblée parlementaire du Conseil de l'Europe les autorités du Portugal et tout particulièrement l'Assemblée de la République pour l'accueil chaleureux et l'excellente organisation de cette conférence. J'aimerais également saluer l'engagement politique du Portugal et son soutien à cette initiative. Permettez-moi également de féliciter nos collègues, membres de l'Assemblée à l'origine de ce projet et tout particulièrement Andrea Rigoni, président de la sous-commission sur la coopération avec les pays d'origine et de transit non européens, de la commission de migration et rapporteur sur plusieurs dossiers relatifs à la question du rôle des diasporas. Mesdames, Messieurs, selon les données de l'Organisation internationale pour les migrations, à la fin de 2015, le nombre total de migrants dans le monde s'élevait à plus d'un milliard de personnes, soit un septième de la population mondiale. La vaste majorité de ces personnes se déplacent à l'intérieur de leur pays, mais les migrations internationales représentaient tout de même quelque 244 millions de personnes au moment où l'étude était faite. Les chiffres ont sûrement évolué depuis, mais la tendance n'a pas changé. Les migrations font désormais partie de notre quotidien. Le continent européen est particulièrement touché par ce phénomène. Selon les études de l'OCDE, 5 millions de personnes se sont installées en 2016 de façon permanente sur le territoire des 35 États membres de l'organisation, dont la majorité sont des pays européens. Les flux migratoires continuent d'être influencés largement par la crise des réfugiés qui touche les deux côtés de la Méditerranée et qui est malheureusement loin d'être terminée. Cette vague migratoire présente un certain nombre de défis et d'opportunités pour l'Europe. Cependant, l'absence d'une politique migratoire coordonnée au niveau européen a favorisé la montée des peurs irrationnelles au sein de la population européenne. Ces peurs ont été ensuite exploitées par certaines forces politiques et certains médias qui ont donné une image déformée de la migration présentée comme une menace. Cette approche négative des migrations est très préoccupante. Non seulement elle favorise les discours populistes, nationalistes et xénophobes, incompatibles avec les principes démocratiques que nous défendons, mais aussi elle contribue à créer une fausse image de la réalité économique et démographique dans nos pays. En effet, dans notre dernier rapport sur les migrations, une chance à saisir pour le développement européen, nous avons noté qu'il existait un écart entre la réalité de la situation économique et démographique de l'Europe et la perception négative générale des conséquences des migrations. Les pénuries de main-d'œuvre dans un certain nombre de secteurs, notamment l'agriculture, la construction, l'hôtellerie, la restauration, l'informatique et les services financiers, ainsi que le vieillissement de la population, sont autant de facteurs qui entraînent une réduction significative de la part de la population en âge de travailler et qui montrent que les migrations pourraient être bénéfiques pour l'Europe. En même temps, il faut reconnaître que les flux migratoires représentent de nombreux avantages dans les pays d'origine migrants. Grâce à leurs liens privilégiés avec leur société d'origine, les communautés de diaspora contribue au développement des liens commerciaux avec les pays d'origine. Il est également important de mentionner la contribution que les migrants apportent au développement économique des pays d'origine par la création d'entreprises communes, au moyen des transferts de fonds, ainsi que le transfert de connaissances et du savoir-faire. Par ailleurs, les migrants favorisent les échanges culturels et éducatifs en contribuant ainsi à la création d'un véritable environnement pluriculturel et multilingue, à la fois dans leur pays d'origine et dans leur pays et dans les pays d'accueil. De par mon expérience politique personnelle, je connais parfaitement les avantages de cette approche gagnant-gagnant. Pendant 24 ans, j'ai dirigé la ville d'Alfortville, une commune de 45 000 habitants située dans la grande agglomération parisienne. Ma ville possède une riche histoire en matière de politique d'intégration et d'interaction avec des communautés de diaspora. Et j'en profite pour saluer Carlos qui, à une époque, grande époque où j'étais maire, on a travaillé ensemble sur la communauté portugaise de ma ville, importante, mais avec les autres communautés aussi, puisque c'était, tout ça était en symbiose. J'ai perdu le fil. Mais c'est pas grave, je vais retrouver. Les acteurs de la société civile, les organisations de diaspora ont toujours joué un rôle très important dans ce processus. Et je voulais bien sûr faire cette petite aparté parce que dans mon expérience personnelle de maire, ça a été un enrichissement extraordinaire. Toutefois, il faut reconnaître qu'il existe encore de nombreux obstacles qui ne nous permettent pas de tirer le meilleur profit des avantages que représentent les flux migratoires. Plusieurs facteurs doivent être pris en compte. Le principal est l'accès des migrants au marché du travail. Dans ce domaine, malheureusement, les migrants sont confrontés à un certain nombre d'obstacles juridiques et administratifs qui empêchent leur intégration harmonieuse dans la main-d'œuvre européenne et les rendent vulnérables à l'exploitation et à la discrimination. D'autres facteurs importants sont l'intégration des migrants dans la société d'accueil et leur participation à la vie culturelle et politique. Dans ces domaines, nous avons encore besoin de faire des progrès. Afin de pallier à ces obstacles, notre Assemblée a formulé une série de recommandations concrètes que nos États membres pourraient mettre en œuvre, notamment en améliorant la législation nationale, en facilitant l'accès des migrants au marché du travail, en développant des sociétés inclusives et en créant des conditions nécessaires à la participation pleine et active des migrants à tous les domaines de la vie. Ces recommandations sont contenues dans notre résolution 2175 de 2017 et je suis convaincu qu'ils vont grandement guider nos travaux. Durant notre conférence, nous allons nous concentrer sur quatre thèmes principaux: la participation démocratique de la diaspora, l'impact de la diaspora sur le développement des pays d'origine, la promotion du dialogue interculturel, le rôle de la diaspora dans les constructions des sociétés inclusives. Ces quatre thèmes pourraient également devenir les grands axes d'action du futur réseau. Et je me réjouis par avance de pouvoir suivre avec intérêt ces débats, les débats et les travaux du futur réseau. Mesdames, Messieurs, chers collègues, nous sommes réunis aujourd'hui ici parce que nous croyons que les migrations représentent une opportunité de rendre nos sociétés plus fortes et mieux adaptées aux défis du monde d'aujourd'hui. Nous voulons que les migrations soient un facteur gagnant-gagnant pour les sociétés d'accueil et les sociétés d'origine. Nous voulons le faire ensemble, en étroite collaboration entre tous les acteurs nationaux, locaux, internationaux, ainsi que la société civile. Le futur réseau parlementaire sur les politiques relatives aux diasporas représente une plateforme institutionnelle pour échanger nos expériences. J'espère donc qu'il deviendra rapidement un véritable pôle international d'expertise en matière de diaspora, en rassemblant les normes européennes élaborées par le Conseil de l'Europe ainsi que les expériences nationales et locales des États membres et partenaires de notre organisation. Je vous remercie de votre attention.
Merci, Monsieur René Roquet, vice-président de l'Assemblée parlementaire du Conseil de l'Europe. E agora tem a palavra o representante especial do secretário-geral do Conselho da Europa para as Migrações e Refugiados, Tomás Wojciech. Faz favor.
Mr. President of the Parliament of Portugal, Mr. Vice President of the Parliamentary Assembly, Mr. Director General of the International Organization for Migration, dear members of national parliaments, ladies and gentlemen, over the 70 years since the end of the Second World War, migration has steadily increased across the European continent. A number have migrated within Europe, while others have come to Europe from third countries. Some arrived as refugees, others left their home countries in search of better opportunities abroad. Regardless of the reason for their migration, many retain strong links with their homelands and a continuing interest in political, cultural and societal developments there. Advances in technology have greatly facilitated the maintenance of such links. Countries of origin and of destination are growing, increasingly aware of what diasporas have to offer. As it has been already mentioned, home countries benefit from remittances sent to family by workers abroad and from the wider opportunities for investment and growth created by its nationals overseas. Host countries reap the rewards of diversity and the rejuvenation of workforces but motivated immigrants seeking to improve their lives. At the same time, the presence of large diasporas can cause tension within communities. Racial hatred and prejudice can lead to incidents of hate crime and violence. Diasporas can also be a source of tension in relations between home and destination states. Governments of the home country may encourage their nationals abroad to act or to vote in a way that coincides with national interests to the frustration of host country governments. Rights and freedoms accorded to migrants in destination countries, including in particular freedom of expression, may vex home countries' governments as attention is drawn to internal issues by nationals protesting abroad. Diaspora populations also have particular interests and needs of their own, which require promotion and protection. The opportunity to participate in political life in their home countries, host countries, or both. Protection against prejudice and discrimination on grounds of their national or ethnic origin. The possibility to access education, employment, and healthcare. The right to use and to teach their children their national languages. The freedom to continue their traditions and to practice their religions. A lack of opportunities and the failure of integration policies can leave members of diasporas isolated, impoverished, and vulnerable to radicalization. The challenge for Council of Europe member states is how to promote the integration of diasporas in their host countries by allowing them also to preserve their links with their countries of origin. Council of Europe standards and activities can provide assistance in meeting this challenge. Mr. Roque has already explained the important work being done by the Parliamentary Assembly of the Council of Europe to ensure recognition and respect for the rights of diasporas. In particular, base recommendations and resolutions have underlined the importance of the political participation of migrants. The European Convention on Human Rights applies to all those within the territories of Council of Europe member states. The rights it enshrines must be guaranteed without distinction on grounds of national origin. These rights include the right to freedom of expression and the freedom of religion. The first protocol to the Convention includes the right to education and the right to participate in elections. Of course, these rights are not absolute, and states may limit them for good cause. However, those imposing restrictions on rights enjoyed by diasporas may be called on to justify the restrictions before the European Court of Human Rights. The Convention is therefore an important tool to protect diasporas from discrimination and to allow them to press for the recognition of rights they deem necessary to further their interests. The European Commission Against Racism and Intolerance, ECRI, monitors discrimination, violence and prejudice against all those present on Council of Europe states' territories. Since diaspora are often a target of such treatment, ECRI's work is of particular relevance to them. ECRI produces reports and recommendations to member states on how to tackle the specific issues it identifies in the course of its country monitoring activities. Its general policy recommendations address thematic issues in relation to racism and intolerance. They are key to informing integration policies and initiatives. The Council of Europe Intercultural Cities Network can also help cities to develop comprehensive intercultural strategies and thus harness the many benefits diversity can bring. Various other Council of Europe instruments, such as the European Social Charter, the Framework Convention for the Protection of National Minorities, and the European Charter for Minority or Regional Languages, have an important role to play. The Framework Convention, for example, aims to promote the equality of all those belonging to minorities and their rights to express, preserve, and develop their culture, religion, language, and traditions. While all of these bodies and instruments are clearly relevant for diasporas in Europe, none has diasporas as its particular focus. This new initiative establishing a parliamentary network on diaspora policies is therefore a timely one to enable states and diasporas to come together and exchange ideas and examples of best practices in this area. Policies for diasporas are sorely needed. The expertise of the Council of Europe, together with national parliamentarians and diaspora associations, can, and I'm sure they will help, to ensure that new policies promote the inclusion of diasporas in host societies while protecting the right to be different. I wish you a successful and fruitful conference. I'm looking forward to cooperating with the new network because I really feel there is a huge potential in it. Thank you very much.
Muito obrigado, Sr. Representante Especial do Secretário-Geral do Conselho da Europa para as Migrações e Refugiados, Tomás Boschek. Vamos agora fazer uma breve interrupção, visto que terminámos a nossa sessão de abertura e os trabalhos prosseguirão imediatamente. Volto a dizer que desejo um ótimo trabalho para todos e muito obrigado.
Bien, mesdames, messieurs, nous allons donc reprendre notre réunion et je vais tout de suite passer, dans le cadre de notre contribution de la diaspora aux sociétés européennes, je vais passer la parole à Monsieur William Lassiswing, qui est le directeur général de l'Organisation internationale pour les migrations. Monsieur Swing, vous avez la parole.
Mr. Vice President, Mr. Special Representative, Your Excellencies, members of the parliaments of your various countries, distinguished representatives of the diaspora groups, distinguished participants, ladies and gentlemen. Such an honor. I'm very humbled by the invitation to be with you this morning and very encouraged by the theme that you have chosen, that you're looking at diaspora and the contributions that they can make. I'm especially to have this opportunity to meet with parliamentarians. We don't spend enough time with parliament members. I'm speaking of those of us in the United Nations and other international organizations. We spend far too little time with mayors who have to provide the shelter, the jobs, the security, and we spend far too little time with our NGO partners. I want to congratulate you on choosing this theme and launching this parliamentary network, which can be so important, as my colleague just said. Now, has already been very clearly stated by the Vice President, we are living in a world on the move. We're living in a world of unprecedented global human mobility. We had the figures already from the Vice President, 1 in 7, 1 billion of our 7 billion world. If you took just the international migrants of 244 million to which he referred, this would give you a population slightly smaller than Indonesia, slightly larger than that of Brazil. They would have a gross domestic product roughly that of a small to medium-sized member state of the European Union. This is a global trend of our time. It will not go away. I've just returned from Niger and Libya. The median age in Niger is 14. The median age in Germany is 49. You don't have to be a PhD to understand the pull and the push factors here. The other drivers, of course, in addition to demographic imbalances, are those of disasters. We're looking at a disaster now in the hurricane season in the Caribbean. But we also have human-made disasters. We have 9 simultaneous armed conflicts from the western bulge of Africa to the Himalayas, with absolutely no hope in sight to solve any of them in the short to medium term. I hope I'm proved wrong, but I believe that to be the case. These are all factors that will push more people out. The vast majority of migrants are migrating in a very regular, peaceful, orderly fashion. But there are at least 66 million who are being forced to move. And that is a record in modern times. Distance shrinking technology, 300 million people connected to the Internet in 2000. Today, it's heading toward 4 billion. If Mark Zuckerberg gets his way, it'll probably be 7 billion. We have distance shrinking technology. I'm going back on one of the budget airlines this evening. You can get anywhere quickly, cheaply. So all of these are factors. Now, we have more and more people, therefore, connected to more than one country. Excuse me for a personal reference. My family is split on 4 continents. I just came back from Cape Town for the marriage of my granddaughter, product of a marriage, my son who fell in love with Cape Town and a local girl when I was ambassador to South Africa during the period of Mr. Mandela's liberation. And now we see that they are still in Cape Town. My wife is from Malaysia, where we have a home. My daughter's in Afghanistan. Her 12-year-old son is living with a maid from West Africa in Manhattan. Now, I say that simply to say that this is becoming much more the norm than the exception, although mine, I admit, is somewhat of an extreme case. We have more family ties increasingly extending across borders. We have more people with dual nationalities. My granddaughter has 3. Others have as many. So diaspora then offer us a chance to have a sense of belonging to more than one country. And there is absolutely no contradiction in being fully integrated into your host society and very active back home as a member of an active diaspora group. So I think these are very exciting times. I have myself now, at my advanced age, I've lived more outside of the United States than inside. I'm just as American as ever, but I've also had the riches of experiences in 3 or 4 continents, including 30 years in Africa. So let me move quickly to say, I get started, sometimes I get carried away. This is just the introduction, but I wanted a few more things before I go to my main points. we've mentioned, and it's very hard to follow these three speakers, I think, who gave us an excellent setting for our discussions. I wish that I could have authored their speeches myself, because they're very good and very helpful. We have economic capital. We've talked about savings, investments, trade. But we have what I talked about already, $600 billion a year in remittances going home, larger than twice as much as all foreign aid, and nearly as much, roughly as much, as all total foreign direct investment. I'll say something later about how we have to improve on how that money is transferred and cut down the costs of transferring it. We have human and social capital, the skills, the knowledge, the motivation, the drive in areas such as health. Now, the common stereotype about migrants is they come here to take advantage of our free social services, public services. That may well be true, but ask ourselves another question. Do we want unhealthy migrants in our community, want unhealthy communities, or do we want to give them access to health facilities? Do we want migrant brats running around, or do we want migrant children who will grow up to make a contribution? So there are several ways to look at it. Cultural capitals, mentioned already by several of my colleagues here, the rich and diverse backgrounds, creating more dynamic and more innovative societies. So more and more governments are beginning to create policies and institutions to address the question of diaspora. Because if you ask me, I would say that the diaspora are the single most neglected aspect of most governments' immigration policies, because it's a rich resource, and we are not capitalizing on it. Over the years, more and more governments have created ministers of the diaspora. I know in Rabat there's the Ministère des Marocains à l'étranger. I convened a conference in 2013 in Geneva. We had 35 governments who sent ministers of diaspora to that. They were brand new then. There are even more today, and I think that is the way to go. So the New York Declaration that was announced last September shows you that migrants are now recognized as the quintessential agents of development. Now, that was my overly long introduction. I had three main points I wanted to make today. And I like alliteration. It's easy to remember. The three E's: to engage the diaspora, to enable the diaspora, and to help empower the diaspora. Under engagement, I would say it means reaching out to them. In countries of origin, networks that connect with returning members of transnational communities, including investors, skilled workers, teachers, professors. Some may come back only for a short vacation period to teach or to work at a local hospital. Countries of destination, we need to maintain outreach through our embassies and consulates, trained labor attachés, and others. No other country looks after its overseas nationals better than the Republic of the Philippines. No Philippine ambassador can survive if they don't make protection of the Philippine nationals abroad their number one priority in their mandate. More of us should probably follow in that direction there. We believe also that we can engage the diaspora in making, we can make provision in our constitutions and our electoral laws, and I know some European countries have done this, to allow for several seats in the parliament for the diaspora representatives, to give them a sense that they still belong at home, they're appreciated, and they have a political role to play. Second point, to enable. Transnational communities can contribute to development to the extent to which they can acquire the necessary skills and resources. There are a number of ways to do this: guaranteeing access to essential public services, ensuring respect for their human rights in return for diaspora's respect for local laws and customs. It's a two-way street. Changing the narrative. I guess the main reason I'm pleased about the theme you've chosen is that if we're going to change the public narrative about migration, which is right now toxic, it is very poisonous. Migration has come to become a dirty word. And we need to come back to an historically more accurate reading of migration, which is that migration has always been historically a positive factor in life. If all of the current day migrants in New York City were to leave tomorrow and form their own city, it would be the third largest city in the United States. So they're making contributions. We are working to change that narrative, to protect migrants and to allow them to make the contribution they want to make. We're working with governments in several ways to reduce the social and financial costs of migration. For example, ethical labor recruitment. We've got a program called International Recruitment, International Standards for Recruitment of Migrants. There are many corrupt and criminal migrant recruitment agencies. Take a young woman, say we're going to get you a job in X, Y, or Z country as a domestic. They get there, the passport is taken away, and they go into a brothel. A young man goes to work thinking he's going to earn good money, and the first year of the salary goes back to the migration agency. Migrants should pay nothing for recruitment. It should be the company that's hiring them who pays for it, if there is a payment. Secondly, we need to reduce the costs of transferring money home. It's particularly egregious in Africa, where it could be 10 to 15% of your hard-earned money just to get the money home. We have a project, IOM, with the Universal Postal Union in Bern, Switzerland, to use the Postal Service to send money home at virtually below 5%, preferably below 3%. We want to integrate migration and national development policies. Now, it's quite clear that we're going to fail if we don't have effective integration policies in countries of destination to ensure adaptation quickly to the environment and the new area, the new economy. We need support for the migrants to access new knowledge, language, skills, and capital, and to foster social inclusion and avoid marginalization. Most of the terrorist attacks that have occurred recently, Paris, Nice, Brussels, San Bernardino, California, Orlando, Florida, have all been homegrown. They are the results of failed integration. So we need to wake up and recognize that if you marginalize people, they're not only not able to contribute, they may turn to doing things that are harmful to us. Third point, we need to help to empower migrants, opening up opportunities and capacities for them to establish their own action plans and priorities. And we've supported governments in several ways to do this. We have facilitated trade and investment missions to bring diaspora back to their country of origin, to learn what's going on and to see what the trade and investment possibilities are. We piloted an innovative project between Moroccan authorities and Belgian financial institutions to try to facilitate direct investment. In Georgia, we are facilitating access to funding for diaspora-led businesses, a dedicated portal that will provide information on investment opportunities. But we're also trying to facilitate mobilization of skills, knowledge, and expertise. Moldova, we have something called Diaspora Excellent Groups Program, just launched in May of this year, to target highly qualified citizens who've been resident for at least 2 years abroad and who want to work with representatives of government to support policy development. Connecting Diasporas for Development, a program in the Netherlands, links professional diaspora members in the Netherlands to institutions in their countries of origin. I spoke to a diaspora group a year ago in The Hague, 300,000 Surinamese residents in the Netherlands. I only had 250 on that day, but still, it was an opportunity to talk to them about trying to help back home to develop Suriname. NGOs can also be very helpful in times of crisis, the diaspora groups I'm thinking of. A year ago, 120,000 Ethiopians were expelled from the Gulf area. We were asked to try to help them find footing back home, where there were no jobs, which is why they left.
we received hundreds of thousands of dollars from the Ethiopian diaspora groups in the U.S. So they come forward in times of crisis. And finally, we need to do financial literacy training and do information on remittance services. We're trying to come up this year with something called the MeGap, which will be an app just for migrants to get basic information. So this is some of the ways in which we can help. Let me leave you with two thoughts. A study that's just been published by one of our main partners, the McKinsey Global Institute, gives you this statistic. For the past 40 years, the number of actual international migrants hasn't changed that much. It's still about 3.5% of the world's population. But the study shows they produce 9% of global GDP, which is 4% more than they would have produced if they had stayed home. That should be a fairly telling statistic if we got the right policies. And then final thought, it's as old as humankind, migration, but it is not a problem to be solved. It is a human reality that needs to be managed, and we're the ones to do it responsibly and humanely. And that's what this conference is all about. Thank you very much.
Merci beaucoup, Monsieur le Directeur Général. J'ai un certain nombre d'orateurs d'inscrits, donc je peux bien sûr reprendre les inscriptions. Et le premier orateur inscrit est Madame Moncaza, présidente de la plateforme des femmes de la diaspora congolaise en Belgique. Vous avez la parole, Madame.
Merci, Monsieur le Président. J'interviens pour présenter un livre dans lequel il y a 129 femmes de la diaspora congolaise de Belgique qui s'expriment. Elles s'expriment de différentes manières. Elles s'expriment par les textes. Il y en a 77 qui ont écrit des textes. Elles s'expriment par les photos des activités qu'elles mènent dans leurs associations. Dans ce livre, qui sera présenté, ça c'est la couverture du livre, hein. Donc le livre qui sera présenté le 15, donc le vendredi, de vendredi en 8 jours, dans ce livre, qu'est-ce qu'on trouve? Les femmes ont réussi à faire une clarification de leurs compétences, ces femmes. Alors, c'est un livre qui peut être considéré comme une recherche-action et dans lequel nous avons réussi à mettre en lumière, les femmes ont réussi à mettre en lumière leurs compétences individuelles. C'est un livre qui peut être utilisé par des responsables et des décideurs qui sont chargés des problèmes de l'emploi, hein, à condition bien sûr qu'ils fassent une comparaison entre ces compétences que les femmes ont clarifiées dans ce livre et les besoins nécessaires du marché de l'emploi. Il y a un autre point qui est très intéressant dans ce livre, c'est que les femmes, il y a des statistiques. Parce que, comme je vous dis, ça peut être considéré comme une recherche-action. Des questions ont été posées aux femmes, notamment la question sur les valeurs. Nous savons combien c'est important la question des valeurs pour le vivre ensemble et pour la communication dans la société. Et il y a des statistiques sur ce que les femmes considèrent comme les trois premières valeurs selon elles. Enfin, je voudrais terminer en disant que dans ce livre-là, nous trouvons également des compétences qu'on peut appeler des compétences comportementales. C'est-à-dire qu'il y a un chapitre dans lequel les femmes qui ont écrit dans ce chapitre-là, les femmes expliquent la manière dont elles essayent de faire face aux situations existentielles, aux situations tragiques. La perte d'un enfant, l'handicap, etc. Donc moi, je vous remercie de m'avoir donné la parole. Ce livre sera présenté à Bruxelles. Pour les personnes qui sont à Bruxelles, vous êtes les bienvenus. Vous pouvez venir rencontrer ces femmes qui sont de la diaspora, qui ont des compétences, qui font des choses et qui ne demandent pas autre chose que à mettre les compétences au service des sociétés d'accueil et des sociétés d'origine. Je vous remercie.
Merci, Madame Moncasa. Je vais donner maintenant la parole à Monsieur Raymond Xeri, qui est président d'European Zugut. Monsieur Xeri, je vous ai la parole.
Yes, thank you, Chair. Thank you, Assembly. I'm representing the Europeans throughout the world, which is Europe's only and largest organization. We represent nearly 350 million Europeans living around the world, from Australia to Canada to any country in the world. This is an organization based in Brussels. We have a set of principles, a set of tasks in order to bring the issue of diaspora forth onto the European agenda. We've actually been proposing to have a convention for Europeans living around the world. So I think this would be a next step after this launching from the Council of Europe, which is an excellent initiative, and I congratulate the organizers, even the government of Portugal, the Council of Europe, and all those involved for this sterling initiative. It is very important that we recognize the importance, the fundamental importance of the diaspora, both in the host countries and in the sending countries. I thank you, Mr. Chair, for this for the time for intervening. We appeal to the European countries who do not have members in the Europeans throughout the world to contact us and put forth a representative, so even there the diasporas can be represented at our assembly. Thank you very much.
Merci, Monsieur Xeri. Ben, votre appel est entendu, je pense, puisque nous sommes nombreux ici pour vous écouter. La parole est à Monsieur Jamal Wayel, qui est membre du Conseil national de la Palestine. Vous avez la parole, monsieur. S'il y a d'autres orateurs qui veulent s'inscrire, je prends les autres. Voilà. Vous avez la parole, monsieur Oyaï.
يعني في البداية يعني أنا جئتكم من فلسطين وهي آخر دولة في العالم إلى الآن ما زالت ترضخ تحت الاحتلال الإسرائيلي. بالبداية أشكر مجلس أوروبا والبرلمان الأوروبي والبرتغال ودولة البرتغال لهذا الموضوع المهم جدا الذي يعالج قضايا المهاجرين والشتات، والتي كما ساعدنا الإخوة المتحدثين قبلنا والأصدقاء وتحدثوا عن الأسباب والآليات لمعالجة هذا الموضوع. وأنا لا أريد أن أكرر نفسي وما تحدثوا به، وأريد أن أقول موضوع واحد محدد، بأن هناك أكثر من 6.5 مليون فلسطيني في الشتات ومهجرين منذ عام 48، والسبب الرئيسي هو الاحتلال الإسرائيلي وإجراءاته. وللمهاجرين الفلسطينيين كان دور كبير في محاولة إعادة بناء فلسطين اقتصاديا من خلال المشاريع والاستثمارات ومن خلال الخبراء والعلماء الذين قدموا إلى فلسطين. أيضا كان هناك دور كبير لفلسطيني الشتات اقتصاديا وسياسيا في دولهم، سواء في أوروبا أو في أمريكا أو في الدول العربية وفي كل مكان. فأنا أريد أن أركز على قضية واحدة في مجلس أوروبا لمعالجة قضايا الشتات، هي معالجة قضايا بلد المنشأ، سواء كان السبب نزاعات عنصرية داخلية أو كوارث طبيعية أو الاحتلال. فمن هون أنا بطالب بتوصيل مهم جدا بأنه الاحتلال هو أحد أهم أسباب الهجرة في العالم، ويجب إدانة الاحتلال وإزالة الاحتلال الإسرائيلي، وهو آخر احتلال في العالم ما زال على صدورنا كشعب فلسطيني ومهجر أكثر من 6 مليون. الحل الوحيد لنا كفلسطينيين من أجل أن نساعد العالم وخاصة في أوروبا أن الكثير من المهاجرين وخاصة الإسلاميين يتحججون بموضوع فلسطين وقضية فلسطين، فحتى نزيل هذه الذريعة لهؤلاء المهاجرين ولأي مهاجرين آخرين في العالم يجب حل موضوع الاحتلال الإسرائيلي وإزالته عن أرضنا والاعتراف بدولة فلسطين كامل عضوية في الأمم المتحدة. وأتمنى أن تكون توصية في مجلس أوروبا ومن اجتماعنا هذا، وشكرا لكم.
Merci monsieur Wayel. La parole est à monsieur Kais Yazadine, membre du Parlement de Jordanie.
Thank you, ladies and gentlemen, for this opportunity to be here today. I come from a country, Jordan, where by 30 to 35% of individuals and citizens who live in Jordan are immigrants. Immigrants by reason of war. I think initially that we have to look at the reasons behind immigration, especially in our part of the world. It's definitely not financial. I join my voice and to my colleague from Palestine by saying that, for example, the main reason of immigration that happened to Jordan was Palestinian immigration as a result of the Israeli occupation. This is one of the main reasons of immigration, for example, in Jordan. The second main reason for the immigration that has occurred by our Syrian brothers to Jordan was the war in Syria as well. So I think that we have to differentiate initially in the reasons of immigration and why they have occurred. In Europe, I understand maybe it's more financial. People seek to live a better life. In our part of the world, people are struggling and are fleeing from their original countries to our country, for example, either as a result of the Israeli occupation or as a result of the wars that occur in our part of the world. I think this is extremely important, a dialogue that we are having here. A balance is always required between integration of migrants with host communities and maintaining links with the countries of origin. This is why I think it is of utmost importance for us to take diaspora forth in countries such as Jordan, whereby we could strike a certain balance between people having their original links with their original countries and integrating with the Jordanian society and the societies of their host countries in the general sense. I do condemn the Israeli occupation, and we do ask for this to be in the final declaration here as a main result of immigration that is happening of the Palestinian people around the world. Thank you very much.
Merci, Monsieur Yazadine. La parole est à Madame Amina Khalid, qui est vice-présidente du réseau de la diaspora africaine des jeunes en Europe.
Good morning. Just a slight correction. I am a former president of ADIN, currently working for an international organization called Initiative of Change, active in 65 countries around the world, as well as an umbrella organization called Somali Initiatives for Democracy and Dialogue. First of all, I would like to say thank you so much for creating such an important space for a dialogue like this to take place today. There has never been a time when such topic has been more important. We see that we live in a world of uncertainty and human insecurity. I am a former refugee living in London currently. I left my home country 20 years ago. And everything that has been shared on this floor this morning is something that very much resonates and speaks to my heart. The experience of discrimination, marginalization, and disconnection between both the host and the respective countries has been one of my own. The direct racism at such an early stage in my life, when I was only 13, escaping from a country of war and civil conflict, and yet coming to a new country where I am seeking safe haven. My experience was so far from that. I really look forward to the board and the panel to create a space where you can actually hear the experience of those who have now left home. There's a beautiful saying which goes along the line of nobody leaves home unless the home becomes the mouth of a shark. I have been forced to flee from my country, from the persecution and conflict. But today, I am very pleased to say that Great Britain has become a new home for me, and a home which I have contributed vastly to. And I look so forward to both working within the host and the respective countries, because I believe that it is the only way forward. But I think that with the new narrative of today, which of course our distinguished speaker called it toxic, is certainly very toxic. And the only way to change that, first of all, is to move away from regarding refugees as numbers and treating them as human beings, because respect comes from that. And acknowledging that no one can do this work on their own. We need to work together. But in order for that to happen, we also need to listen with our hearts.
Merci, Madame Khalid. La parole est à Monsieur O'Brien, membre de la Commission des Affaires étrangères du Parlement d'Irlande.
Thank you, Mr. President, and very much welcome the opportunity to contribute here today. I would say, from Ireland's perspective, that Ireland has a diaspora of 70 million people across the world. It's the largest proportion in proportion to its home population, and that has been borne out by many previous speakers, such as from Palestine and from Jordan and others, mainly due to historic persecution, but also due for economic reasons. So in a country like America, 35 million people claim Irish heritage and Irish descent. I'm delighted to see Mr. Lacey Swing here today, and I'm sure in New York you'll know of many Irish that are there in Manhattan who've contributed in a positive way. And I was very taken by Mr. Swing's comments, particularly around the fact that migration has become a dirty word. And I would agree with him. And I think the EU has a major role to play there. And three quick things I would say is that the European Union needs to review its support for third country arrangements on migration. The deal with Turkey, a further deal with Libya, the situation, the conditions that migrants find themselves in trying to cross the Mediterranean. I understand for the southern Mediterranean countries there's pressure on them also, but Médecins Sans Frontières just today have launched a report in Brussels from the detention centres and their experience of the detention centres in Libya. So Europe itself, well, needs to be a welcoming place, but needs to be a welcoming place by its actions as well. And I think we must be very careful when we enter into third country arrangements like the one that's being proposed with Afghanistan as well, that we look at the human rights records of those countries that we're entering into arrangements with, because that fundamentally is how people will actually see our bona fides as a European Union. I think furthermore a big challenge facing us is displaced citizens within our own European Union. And it was mentioned by the Speaker of the Parliament, the President of the Portuguese Parliament, in relation to the challenges that Brexit will pose. Post-Brexit, we will have in all our home EU states, in Ireland in particular, we will have the largest number of EU citizens outside of the European Union in the north of Ireland. We'll have spoke to a colleague from Poland. Portugal is the same situation, with a large diaspora in Britain. And we've got to make sure that those our citizens' and our colleagues' rights are actually upheld by the British as well, because the sense coming from Britain at the moment is they're looking to not reciprocate in full those rights for EU citizens residing in Britain, and they're trying to create another level or another status of citizenship. So I do think really we need to, diaspora, it's really important that we're focusing on it. Certainly in my own country we hold the diaspora in high regard, and I'll conclude on this, Cathaoirleagh, is that I would say that in Ireland our new communities and the immigrants from across the European Union and from abroad that make up over 10% of our population have contributed extremely positively to our country and the diversity and the wealth of diversity in our country. So, Garamago, thank you.
Merci, Monsieur O'Brien. La parole est à Monsieur Moubdi du Parlement du Maroc.
Merci, Monsieur le Président. Je dois remercier de mon propre et profond cœur toutes et tous ceux qui ont pris l'initiative de penser au lancement et à prendre l'initiative de ce réseau pour débattre d'un thème si important qui nous préoccupe tous. Aujourd'hui, j'ai eu le cœur réchauffé à partir des exposés que nous venons d'écouter et d'entendre ce matin. Un sujet important qui préoccupe non pas seulement les pays du Sud, qui sont les pays d'origine, mais en fait, il y a aussi l'immigration nord-nord et nord-sud et sud-sud. Donc nous sommes préoccupés tous par un mouvement humanitaire auquel on doit donner une attention particulière. D'abord, il y a les problèmes d'intégration. J'aurais aimé avoir avec nous, parmi les conférenciers, des responsables ou des experts des pays d'origine ou des pays de transit qui vivent aujourd'hui les départs de ces immigrés et le retour dans leur pays d'origine. Ce sont des expériences à écouter et j'espère voir dans les futures rencontres un autre son de cloche. Ça ne peut être que bénéfique et enrichissant pour notre débat. Et je crois que les questions qui ont été débattues et présentées ce matin sont très intéressantes. Et je m'accroche à une seule chose, c'est que l'immigration est tout à fait positive. Il faut la prendre de ce côté-là. Moi, je suis maire d'une petite ville au Maroc qui a une population assez importante en Italie et en Espagne. Je leur rends souvent visite dans ces pays-là. Ils se sont intégrés. Ils apportent beaucoup de choses à l'économie, au PNB, mais ils trouvent des difficultés d'intégration dans la vie politique, dans la vie culturelle, dans la vie sociale de ces pays-là. Je n'ignore pas l'impact très positif de ces émigrés dans notre pays, leur apport financier. Certes, il y a beaucoup de difficultés de transfert de ces fonds-là, mais ils apportent beaucoup de bénéfices à notre pays. Et je crois que ce sont des questions qu'on aura le temps et la possibilité de débattre à partir de réalités que nous sommes en train de vivre. Je vous remercie encore une fois. Le thème est très important et les allocutions de ce matin m'ont donné beaucoup d'espoir pour contourner et pour appréhender ce sujet qui, il faut le rendre positif aujourd'hui. Merci beaucoup.
Merci, Monsieur Moubdi. Est-ce qu'il y a d'autres orateurs qui veulent s'inscrire? Alors, oui, Monsieur Talat. Il n'y a pas d'autres? Alors, Monsieur Talat, vous êtes membre du Parlement d'Égypte, vous avez la parole.
Shukran ma'ala al-Rais, ala al-Dawa al-Karima. يعني أنا حابب أقول إن إحنا في مصر بنهتم جدا بالمغتربين، عندنا وزارة للمغتربين، الدستور المصري اعتنى جدا بالمغتربين، عمل ليهم نسبة في التمثيل الدبلوماسي، حوالي 8 ممثلين في البرلمان المصري للمغتربين، لكن إحنا بنواجه عدة مشاكل وتحديات عظمى في هذا الملف. أول مشكلة ما يدور في ليبيا حاليا وما يدور في العراق. كانت مصر لديها عمال في ليبيا يتعدوا حوالي 5 مليون عامل، كذلك في العراق. المشكلتين دول أثروا بشكل قوي وفعال علينا. المهاجرين المصريين في الخارج بيحولوا بمقدار حوالي 19 مليار جنيه، وده رقم بالنسبة لنا رقم مهم جدا. لكن أنا عايز أقول أنه هناك تحديات كبرى في المرحلة اللي جاية من وجهة نظري هتواجه المغتربين على مستوى العالم، منها أنه معدلات النمو في دول المهجر بتتراجع، والتراجع في معدلات النمو دوا هيؤدي إلى مشاكل ضخمة، وهيخلي حتى الناس اللي هم بيحاربوا المهاجرين بيديهم فرصة. كل من هو بيتعامل مع المهاجرين بشكل مستفز، سواء إن هم بيقولوا ما لهمش حق في التعليم أو حق في التعبير أو حق من حقوقهم المكتسبة، معدلات التراجع دي هتخلي كل من هو يتبنى هذا النهج هيعمل مشاكل ضخمة مع المهاجرين. ولذلك النهاردة لابد نشوف معدلات التراجع اللي بتتم في دول المهجر، يمكن سبب من الأسباب دي. كذلك التقدم التكنولوجي اللي حاصل النهاردة بيؤدي إلى أيضا تراجع في استخدام بعض الأمور، وده بيخلي أنه بيأثر بشكل كبير جدا، وخصوصا على الجيل الثاني من المهاجرين ما بيلقوش شغل كافي ليهم في دول المهجر. ولذلك أنا يمكن بطالب المؤتمر أنه لابد يبقى في زي منظمة تربط ما بين الطرف الأول اللي هو المهاجر، والطرف الثاني اللي هو بلد المهجر الأصلي، والطرف الثالث اللي هو البلد المحتضن أو بلد التهجير. أخيرا بضم صوتي إلى صوت ممثل دولة فلسطين، برلمان دولة فلسطين، وزميلي من الأردن. نحن ندين بشدة الاحتلال الإسرائيلي ومراسته التي تؤدي إلى هجرة كثير جدا من أبناء فلسطين بشكل مستفز وغير آدمي، ولذلك نحن ندين هذا الاحتلال. علينا جميعا أن نعمل على حل المشكلة الفلسطينية، وأرى أن يتضمن المؤتمر إحدى توصياته أنه هو لابد من حل المشكلة الفلسطينية. شكرا يا فندم.
Merci monsieur Talat. D'autres orateurs?
Mr. Fatah.
Je vois pas. Non. Monsieur Couscous, c'est ça? Vous avez la membre du Parlement du Maroc.
Shukran Sid Raïs. بداية أريد أن أوجه الشكر للجمعية البرلمانية لمجلس أوروبا على تنظيم هذا اللقاء الذي يعد فرصة سانحة لتعزيز الحوار شمال جنوب بشأن واحدة من القضايا الاستراتيجية التي تحتاج إلى حوار دولي ومنتظم ودائم، ألا وهي الشتات. ربما سوف لن أقف عندما جاء في كلمة زميلي في مجلس النواب كل ما هناك. أريد من باب تبادل التجارب أن أتقاسم معكم بعض الممارسات التي انتهجتها وانتهجها بلدي المغرب في سبيل تعزيز المشاركة الديمقراطية للجالية المغربية بالخارج. وأريد أن أبدأ بدستور 2011، الدستور الجديد، حيث أن المشرع خصص حيزا هاما للتنصيص على حقوق المغاربة بالمهجر ومشاركة ديمقراطية فعلية في تقريبا 5 فصول. والحكومة عمدت إلى من أجل تنزيل مقتضيات الدستور ومواكبة هذه المقتضيات عمدت إلى بلورة استراتيجية وطنية طموحة تتعلق ومندمجة لفائدة المهاجرين أو المغاربة العالم. وهذه الاستراتيجية كما جاء على لسان السيد المدير العام لمنظمة الهجرة، فهذه الاستراتيجية تقودها وزارة مكلفة خصيصا بالمغاربة المقيمين بالخارج وشؤون الهجرة. لا أريد أن أخوض في تفاصيل هذه الاستراتيجية وفي الواجهات 14 التي تتكونها وتتضمنها هذه الاستراتيجية. أريد أن أؤكد أن مغاربة العالم اليوم حاضرون ويشاركون بقوة وفاعلية في اتخاذ القرار، سواء على المستوى التشريعي أو على المستوى إعداد السياسات العمومية. إلى جانب الحكومة كذلك تسهر مجموعة من المؤسسات الدستورية، وهذا جاء في الكلمة السيد المدير العام. هناك بعض المؤسسات الدستورية الوطنية تساهم في إشراك المغاربة العالم من خلال مجلس الجالية في اتخاذ القرار، وعلى رأسها البرلمان والمجلس الوطني لحقوق الإنسان والمجلس الاقتصادي والاجتماعي والبيئي، بالإضافة كذلك إلى أن هناك بعض الأحزاب السياسية المغربية حاليا قد شيدت جسورا مع الجالية المغربية بالخارج. كنت أريد فقط من خلال المداخلة أن أتكلم عن بعض التجارب المؤسساتية للمغرب في هذا الباب، وشكرا.
Merci beaucoup, Monsieur Couscous. La parole est à Monsieur Gamito Antonio, qui est directeur exécutif du Centre Nord-Sud du Conseil de l'Europe. Monsieur Gamito, vous avez la parole.
Merci beaucoup, Monsieur Rouquet. Comme je suis national du Portugal, je vais parler en portugais, si vous ne dérangez pas. Gostaria de, antes de mais, agradecer a iniciativa que a Assembleia da República Portuguesa e a Assembleia Parlamentar do Conselho da Europa teve sobre, para fazer este lançamento da rede parlamentar sobre políticas de diásporas em Portugal. Portugal é um país com grande história e grande trabalho e com alguns sucessos neste aspecto. Portanto, como português, embora esteja a representar seja o diretor executivo do Centro Norte-Sul do Conselho da Europa em Lisboa, como português fico extremamente orgulhoso. Depois gostaria de comentar que este trabalho é um trabalho global. O Sr. Lacey Swing, da OIM, apontou um caminho com o qual concordo, que são os três I's, Enable, Enhancing e Empowerment. Nós, no Centro Norte-Sul, à medida das nossas possibilidades, fazemos isso, sobretudo através de mecanismos de advocacy e raising awareness, mas não chega, é preciso mais. Se falarmos, gostaria que esta conferência não fosse muito concentrada só na Europa, porque as migrações não são só de sul para norte, há também de norte para sul e sobretudo de sul para sul. Era um aspecto que eu talvez pedisse que também não fosse esquecido neste debate. Aliás, na minha perspectiva, e talvez o Sr. Lacey Swing possa confirmar isso, os números dos movimentos migratórios sul-sul são superiores ao sul-norte. E, portanto, esta rede parlamentar que começou no Conselho da Europa é muito importante para agregar outras redes parlamentares, e aqui o Sr. Representante Especial do Secretário-Geral do Conselho da Europa está a trabalhar no contexto do Conselho da Europa nestas questões, e em particular numa questão que eu gostaria de salientar, que são os menores não acompanhados. As migrações não são só derivadas de guerras, de questões de saúde, de questões económicas, de questões de falta de integração social. Há consequências gravíssimas e uma delas, na minha perspectiva, são os menores não acompanhados, e nós estamos também, através do Raising Awareness e da Advocacy, a chamar a atenção para estes problemas. Foi por isso que, o ano passado, a senhora Laura Papa, da Nacional Grega, de uma ONG, a Metadraci, recebeu o Prémio Norte-Sul do Conselho da Europa, exatamente nesta sala, pelas mãos do Sr. Presidente da República de Portugal. Finalmente,
Queria apenas dizer uma palavra a todos os membros dos parlamentos que aqui se encontram, da Europa, da região do Mediterrâneo, da África, a importância da vossa presença como o Centro-Norte-Sul do Conselho da Europa, como um acordo parcial do Conselho da Europa, vê esta situação. Nós pensamos que o trabalho dos parlamentos é absolutamente essencial para ajudar e contribuir para resolver este problema que vai continuar nos próximos tempos, como mais uma vez dizia o Sr. Lacey Swing, mas não podemos esquecer que através das redes parlamentares, as abordagens bottom-up da sociedade civil são também muito importantes para ajudar a resolver este problema. Muito obrigado a todos.
Merci, Monsieur Gavito. La parole est à Madame Cavadia Ioneta, la présidente de la délégation nationale de Grèce.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. As you've said, I come from Greece, and regarding the refugee and migration issue, I will not get tired of reminding that both phenomena are here to stay. They have already become a permanent situation that we need to deal with humanely and with compassion, that derive from union law, regulations and international conventions, not by choice, but by principle. Dear colleagues, the EU, among others, provided war material in the Middle East, and the refugees and migrants were the result of the subsequent war. It is common ground, I hope by now, that Greece, my country, did more than her fair share to cope with the problem due to its geography, but mostly due to the determination of its government and solidarity of its people. However, a country that happens to be in a deep financial crisis for more than 7 years now cannot fulfill such a tremendous task by itself. And all effort is futile since these people won't be given the opportunity to travel to their country of choice and are blocked in Greece instead. The renounced EU-Turkey agreement has not been functional from the start since the relocation resettlement clause was never truly activated. However, instead of learning from our mistakes, I'm afraid we are determined to upgrade them. During the latest mini-Euro-African summit regarding the refugee crisis, the course of action decided was a clear turn for the worse. Camps located in African countries where union law does not apply. Refugees and migrants are to be held in camps in Nigeria, Libya and Chad. The segregation amongst refugees and migrants will take place there. As German Chancellor Angela Merkel admitted, the main goal is to block migrant flows in Africa permanently and to make more agreements like the EU-Turkey one with the three aforementioned African countries. There was also content amongst the summit participants because discussion practices were successful and flows diminished. UNHCR and numerous NGOs are already condemning the developments, and both them and Chancellor Merkel admit that the situation in the Libyan camps has already become inhumane. However, the individual coordination between Italian officials and the Libyan Coast Guard is progressing in hindering migrant flows in the Mediterranean. Those grim developments are the subsequent and inevitable, as it seems, future to an already bad present. These decisions are certainly fabled in legal substantiation. They are not aligned with basic human rights agenda, the principles and ideals of the French Revolution, everything that marked Europe as the guard of individual rights, tolerance towards difference and social solidarity. Neoliberalism is sadly setting the agenda in social issues in the EU as we speak. We realize the difficulties, financial and others, but we are not convinced that another course of action is not possible. We need to see in fact-finding missions exactly what are the living conditions of refugees and migrants in the African camps. We need to check the legitimacy of whole venture. And we need to take up initiatives in order to see if and how the Assembly can support the rights of these people in the field. Thank you very much.
Bien, Madame la Présidente. Je vais passer la parole maintenant à Monsieur Oussala du Parlement algérien.
Merci, Monsieur le Président. إذن بعد بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم والصلاة والسلام على رسول الله الكريم. تدخلي يندرج في حقيقة الأمر في سياق ما جاء في كلمة زملائي من الأردن ومصر وزملائي وجيراني جغرافيا وفي القاعة المغاربة الأشقاء بشأن سعي دول الأصل أو دول المنبع أو حتى دون أن أتغافل كذلك على ضم صوتي لصوت زميلي المحترم من فلسطين فيما يتعلق بإدانة الاحتلال احتلال فلسطين من طرف الكيان الإسرائيلي، وحتى فيما يتعلق كذلك بالتأكيد على أن تاريخ البشرية يؤكد بأن الحروب والاحتلال كان دائما ودوما أحد أهم الأسباب المتعلقة، إن لم يكن أهمها، المتعلقة بتدفق الهجرة من دول الأصل. في هذا التدخل المختصر سأسعى إلى أن أتحدث كذلك عن بعض ما جاء في كلمة القيمة للسيد المدير العام للمنظمة الدولية للهجرة فيما يتعلق بسعي بعض الدول إلى تضمين سياساتها ما يربط العلاقة بينها وبين هجرتها أو جاليتها في الخارج، ومن ذلك أسعى إلى أن أتحدث كما جاء في كلمة زميلي من المغرب على أنه لو كانت لنا الفرصة أن نفيدكم ببعض من تجاربنا المعيشة أو من بعض من سياساتنا المتخذة لكان الأمر سيكون أحسن، ولكن سننتهز هذه الفرصة السانحة المتعلقة بالتدخل لنتحدث مثلا عن بلدي الجزائر التي مثلا في الجانب العلمي أو البحث العلمي تسعى إلى أن تربط منصة التواصل بين وزارة التعليم العالي والنخبة العلمية الموجودة في الخارج، لأنه ماهوش من الأمر السهل أن يتم استرجاع الأدمغة أو المادة الرمادية الجزائرية التي درست في الخارج واستقرت بالخارج إلى أن يتم استرجاعها إلى الوطن، لذلك في تواصل يتعلق بالبحث العلمي في هذا المجال. في المجال السياسي وهو ما تحدث عنه المدير العام للمنظمة الوطنية للهجرة والمنظمة الدولية العفو للهجرة، سياسيا الجالية الجزائرية لها نصيب أو حصة هامة في المجلس الشعبي الوطني وهو الغرفة السفلى للبرلمان الجزائري حتى ترفع أو يرفع هؤلاء النواب انشغالاتهم إلى المؤسسات الجمهورية للبلد الأم. كذلك مما تحدث عنه المدير العام للمنظمة الدولية للهجرة أن مثلا الجزائر في تعديلها الدستوري الذي بدأ به السيد رئيس الجمهورية السيد عبد العزيز بوتفليقة في 2016 ضمنت دستورها في المادة 27 منه واجبات على الدولة تجاه جاليتها في الخارج، وبالمقابل حقوقا أو واجبات لهذه الجالية في مواجهة الدولة، ومن أهم ذلك أن الدولة تسهر على الحفاظ على هوية المواطنين المقيمين في الخارج وتعزيز روابطهم مع الأمة وتعبئة مساهمتهم في تنمية البلد الأصلي البلد الأم الجزائر. إذن ما من دوحة ما من شك أن الجزائر تهتم بدور الجالية أو نخبتها أو شتاتها بالخارج في تنمية الوطن الأم، لكننا رغم هذا وغير هذا مما لا يسمح به الوقت لضيقه إلا أنني أطرح تساؤل أو هي المعادلة الصعبة التي تبحث فيها هذه الندوة، أنه كيف نجعل من المغترب مواطنا لبلدين في آن واحد، لبلد الأم ولبلد المهجر. الأمر صعب، صعب جدا في ظل مفهوم مواطنة عبر القانون الدولي الآن، المواطنة أو الانتماء لابارتونس أصبح مفهوما هلاميا مطاطيا. أعتقد أن بالنسبة للبعض الوطن هو الوطن الذي يقدم العيش الرغد ويقدم الحقوق وإلى ذلك، الأمر أصبح صعبا في هذا الإطار، وأجد بأن البحث في هذه المعادلة الصعبة هو أكثر من سبب ملائم وجدي ومجدي لعقد هكذا ندوة وفتح هذا الفضاء للتبادل والأفكار والرؤى. لذلك لا يسعني سوى أن أشكركم على هذه المبادرة الفتية. الشكر موجه للجمعية البرلمانية للمجلس أوروبا على الفكرة، والشكر موجه للبرلمان البرتغالي على الاستضافة وعلى حسن الضيافة، وشكرا سيد الرئيس. مرسي مسيو بريزيدان.
Merci, Monsieur Oussala. La parole est à Monsieur Marques du Parlement portugais.
Thank you, Mr. President. I will speak in Portuguese, as we are in Portugal. Eu gostava de, em primeiro lugar,
dar as boas-vindas em meu nome pessoal, que faço parte desta também da delegação portuguesa da Assembleia Parlamentar, dar as boas-vindas a todos os colegas que vieram de várias partes do mundo e salutar a brilhante organização, quer da Comissão de Migrações e Pessoas Deslocadas, quer da Assembleia da República. Mas estava aqui a ouvir os nossos colegas a falar e estava-me a recordar que, na maior parte dos debates que temos na Assembleia Parlamentar do Conselho da Europa, e ainda recentemente tive a oportunidade e o privilégio de apresentar um relatório sobre uma resposta compreensiva à crise dos refugiados, que teve a opinião da Sra. Cavadia e que foi uma excelente colaboração nesta matéria, mas conseguimos chegar a este ponto e perceber que estaremos de acordo em 95% das reflexões sobre o problema dos refugiados e sobre as formas como podemos diminuir o impacto humanitário e como é que podemos combater os problemas que prejudicam os refugiados e conseguir que os refugiados tenham condições de integração, que possam também voltar aos seus países em condições de segurança e ajudar esses países a não ter a necessidade de ter tantos refugiados, ou seja, a poder interferir e intervir nas zonas de origem onde podemos criar condições ou podemos ajudar esses países a resolver os seus problemas. E, portanto, estaremos todos de acordo que a solução, quer nos países de origem, quer nos países de acolhimento, está discutida entre nós, todos concordaremos com 90% das soluções, mas o propósito desta reunião e desta plataforma é sobretudo, e é o principal, é colocar ao mesmo nível os deputados eleitos pela diáspora e os representantes das ONGs e os deputados eleitos nos Parlamentos Nacionais. É por isto que aqui estamos. O diagnóstico, na minha opinião, com todo o respeito, está feito. Temos que procurar aquilo que nos une e tentar aqui encontrar e dar voz aos representantes das diásporas para que os deputados também os ouçam e que nos possam dar sugestões o que é que podemos fazer de melhor para melhorar a sua integração. É para isto que serve esta plataforma, é para isto que serve esta conferência, é para isto que serve esta iniciativa. E, portanto, só vale a pena se tivermos este propósito, porque confesso que já todos nos ouvimos centenas de vezes a repetir as mesmas coisas e agora é tempo de agir. O diagnóstico está feito, vamos ter que tentar justificar para que é que esta plataforma pode melhorar os representantes das diásporas em Portugal ou nos outros países todos a fazer melhor para integrar os seus colegas, os seus concidadãos nos países acolhedores e também para melhorar a relação que existe entre eleitos e aqueles que representam os refugiados, os imigrantes e as pessoas deslocadas. Era este apelo que eu fazia, não me levem sinceramente a mal, mas eu estava a ouvir as vossas intervenções e estava com receio que esta conferência fosse mais uma repetição daquilo que todos nós já fizemos centenas de vezes. E devemos aproveitar a presença de todos aqui para podermos colaborar mais e ver o que é que podemos fazer melhor e de mais pragmático para melhorar as condições com que recebemos estas pessoas. Muito obrigado.
Merci, Monsieur Marquez. Je vais clôturer la liste des intervenants. Il me reste un orateur. Est-ce qu'il y a d'autres orateurs qui veulent s'inscrire? Personne? Et après, on donnera la parole à Monsieur le Directeur Général. Oui, je donne la parole à Monsieur Munyama et puis après, Madame et Monsieur Munyama, Parlement de Pologne, vous avez la parole.
Yes, please. Thank you very much for the floor, the chair. Person, and I'm an MP from Poland, and I would like to share a few experiences over what the diaspora has done so far. What has been mentioned so far is the fact that, you know, the movement of people is, you know, from many different parts of the world to the other parts of the world. It can be from south to south, it can be from south to north, it can be from east to west. As Poles, there are so many of us in the United Kingdom. There are so many of us in Ireland. There's a lot of Polish people living in other European Union countries. But at the same time, we've got a lot of Ukrainians living in Poland, almost a million. So the movement is actually a steady force. But as my colleague Marcus has mentioned, we have to find common denomination in order to resolve the problems of the diaspora today. Experiences of many parliaments of different parts of the world are different. We have to learn from each other. We have to give lessons to those that haven't had any experience of that nature. We are in Poland. We have got a small group of the African diaspora, which has made an impact on the relationship between Poland and Africa today. We have played a very big role in the Go Africa program that is going on within Poland in order to allow the entry, or rather to increase the cooperation both economically, politically, and socially between Poland and African countries. So I would like to emphasize the fact that we need to learn about the experience, especially of Portugal, in as far as the relationship between the diaspora and the Parliament of Portugal has been done. So in this particular conference, I believe that we'll be in a position to share a lot of issues that are of importance, as well as to be able to implement issues of importance. I fully agree with the delegation from Palestine, from Jordan, mentioning the fact that, you know, the problem of the occupation of Palestine is actually one of those big issues that need to be resolved. We have the war in Syria as well, which is a big impact on the movement of the people. So I look forward to a very effective and concrete solutions to the problem of the diaspora and the way it operates in this conference. Thank you so much.
Merci, Monsieur Munyama. La parole est à Madame Barocco, qui est la directrice générale de la plateforme mondiale pour les étudiants syriens. Madame Barocco, vous avez la parole. Dernier orateur inscrit.
Thank you. As the previous Portuguese speakers, I will switch into Portuguese. Muito obrigada pela oportunidade de intervir. Pertencendo à categoria dos outros participantes, não tenho a certeza que tivesse direito à palavra, mas uma vez que me dão, agradeço. Eu gostaria de falar de uma iniciativa que Portugal assumiu em 2013, e que tem vindo a implementar como um exemplo de boas práticas e de políticas de integração de refugiados, neste caso, e de pessoas em situação de emergência. E refiro-me ao programa de bolsas de estudo de emergência para estudantes sírios, que foi uma iniciativa e é... penso eu, relativamente pioneira na Europa, e que temos desenvolvido de forma a tornar mais abrangente. Desta forma, o ano passado, no âmbito da Cimeira dos Refugiados e Migrantes das Nações Unidas, que teve lugar há um ano atrás, concretamente a 19 de setembro, pugnámos para que a questão do acesso ao ensino superior dos refugiados e dos estudantes em mobilidade forçada fosse consagrada na Declaração de Nova Iorque, o que conseguimos com um parágrafo 82, e dentro deste contexto estamos agora a desenvolver um projeto mais vasto que pretende dar uma resposta sustentável e sistémica à questão do acesso ao ensino superior nas emergências. Refiro-me concretamente ao projeto da criação de um Rapid Response Mechanism for Higher Education in Emergencies. Não me alongarei sobre a matéria, mas quem estiver interessado em saber mais, em associar-se a este projeto, terei todo o gosto em dar explicações adicionais, que aliás poderão encontrar no nosso website www.globalplatformforsyrianstudents.org. Obrigada.
Merci, Madame Barocco. Monsieur le directeur général, Monsieur Lassis, oui, vous avez beaucoup, il a été fait beaucoup de références à votre intervention. Est-ce que vous souhaitez nous dire un mot de conclusion?
Thank you very much, Mr. Vice President. I'm afraid that my wife were here, she would accuse me of wanting to have the last word, which I never do. But no, I've listened with a lot of interest and engagement to very rich range of interventions here. And it's very encouraging and even inspiring, I think, to say that so many of you, whether you're parliamentarians or NGOs or otherwise, to see this engagement on what I think is one of the critical issues of our time. I sort of captured, there was a lot there. I tried to, again, using my idea of having 3 points, I tried to group it under 3 points. I think the first thing that emerges from this is that a recognition that there is not enough sense of shared responsibility among us all, and the key role that parliaments can play in creating that sense of shared responsibility. If you take our colleagues who've spoken today, for example, take the four neighbors of Syria, water-poor Jordan is hosting nearly 1.5 million or so Syrian refugees. Lebanon, with a population of 4.5 million, has 1.5 million Syrians at last count, plus 500, our colleague from Palestine, 500,000 Palestinians who've been in Lebanon for many, many years. So they've got roughly 2 million refugees in a population of 4.5 million. And I think that's very important in terms of perspective. All six neighbors of Libya, after the fall of President Gaddafi in February 2011, all six neighbors kept their doors open at great economic cost to their country because there was that sense of shared responsibility. And you can argue, well, it's because they all speak the same language, et cetera, same culture and so on. But nonetheless, they took on the responsibility that was required. So it's important to keep that, I think, in perspective as we move forward. I think of my last two visits to Libya, one just about 4 weeks ago, the 31 or more detention centers there, horrific conditions, and we're all trying to help the government to build the capacity to address that situation. We have 200 staff inside Libya trying to upgrade the detention facilities, trying to convert them into open reception centers where separating the men and the women so there's a greater humane conditions there. But that sense of shared responsibility is extremely important, and that's really what this Global Compact on Migration is all about that was agreed we would negotiate this last September 19 in New York. We think that this is our best chance ever to get some attention for those people who are not qualified under the 1951 Refugee Convention or the Stateless Persons Convention. There are just an awful lot of people on the move who are vulnerable. You know yourself by movement. When you're on the move, you are prone to vulnerability, whether it's language, whether it's an accident along the way or whatever. And that's my second point, that if I look at the world today, one of the realities that confronts me head on is youth unemployment. Absolutely enormous in the developing parts of the world, particularly in Africa, with enormous growth rates, an aging Europe with more people dying than being born and those remaining getting older and tax bases shrinking and jobs availability growing. So we've got to do something, and I think the Global Compact would help us in this regard. Victims of trafficking. We've assisted and brought home more than 90,000 victims of trafficking in the last few years. The sick and the elderly, the many economic migrants along the way. And I can tell you that in those detention centers in Libya, the vast majority are economic migrants, young people basically looking for work. So we need to be a lot more creative in our consular and visa policies. We have the World Trade Organization down the street from our headquarters in Geneva, all about the free flow of capital, goods, and services. Something missing. The people who make that happen. There is no, and I'm not talking about open borders, but we have not really adapted our consular and visa policies to the new realities of our time. We can be more creative. Temporary protective status until the situation gets better. Then you go home. Temporary student visas, temporary work permits, all kinds of things that could be done. So I think this is why this conference is very exciting, because you have a chance to stretch our minds further and see what more that we could possibly do to help there. And now, of course, you have a new element that linked in the public mind now to migration is terrorism. Every tourist a potential terrorist. And that makes the atmosphere even more toxic. So we have a lot of work to do in all of these particular areas. I guess the third point would be that there's a lot of talk about integration versus marginalization. And several of you have made the point that you can be both fully integrated and also be an active member of the diaspora. And that's really, that is the magic formula when you serve host and home societies. That links the world up in a way that it should be. The whole program of return of qualified nationals, we've taken 150 Somali nationals back to Somalia to help build the capacity of government and develop the private sector. We've done it in 35 or 40 countries. We need to do a lot more of that. Since a lot of the focus is on Europe, understandably, what I find missing, and I'm very much in praise of what the European Commissions and European Council are trying to do, I think you've got three basic challenges, not meaning to single out for criticism Europe, but number one, you don't have a migrant crisis so much as a political crisis. The 1.5 million people who came north in 2015, 2016, compared to the 1.5 million in Lebanon, you have a population of 550 million, should have been a manageable situation and not been a crisis. But in point of fact, when the federal chancellor said, wir schaffen das, we can do it, she must have assumed that some of the other 27 countries would follow, and only a couple did, and not for very long. So the political disunion right now becomes part of the problem. And I'm not one to single it out, because all 28 member states of the European Union are members of IOM, and we work closely with all of them, as well as we have a very strategic partnership with the European Union. I just signed an agreement, 200 million euros, in the 15th of December with Mrs. Mogherini to build these way stations throughout West Africa from Senegal to Cameroon, like the one we have in Agadez in Niger, to try to help migrants along the way and encourage them not to let themselves go into the hands of smugglers. The second area is what I call, or what actually Javier Solana calls, refugee amnesia, that we've forgotten. My organization, IOM, which many or most of you are members, was founded in 1951 to take European refugees to safe shores and new lives. But today, we've kind of forgotten that. Hungary sent 200,000 Hungarians fled to Austria and Yugoslavia 61 years ago to open arms and open purses and all of that. And then the third thing, of course, the third area of challenge for Europe is to what I call a psychological adjustment. Having peopled the world for three centuries, both colonies and multinational corporations, continent of origin, has now become a continent of destination because of the demographic imbalances. And that's a psychological adjustment. Basically, I want to say, how do we manage this? Because it's going to be a reality anyway. But I apologize. Hard to make a short speech.
Non, merci beaucoup, Monsieur le Directeur Général. Donc, je voudrais vous remercier tous les orateurs qui se sont exprimés ce matin dans ce débat qui a été très riche et qui va se poursuivre, bien sûr. Maintenant, nous allons lever la séance. Je vais demander aux membres des deux sous-commissions qui devaient se réunir à 15h, qui vont se réunir à 14h30 ici. Les membres des deux sous-commissions. Maintenant, je voulais vous dire aussi qu'on est, on est invité à un déjeuner qui est offert par l'Assemblée, par le Parlement. Et donc, pour se rendre à l'endroit du déjeuner, il va falloir suivre les personnes du protocole, donc essayer de se regrouper pour essayer de ne pas se perdre dans les couloirs. D'autres annonces? Non? Voilà, je vous souhaite un bon appétit, puis à cet après-midi à la reprise, et encore merci, monsieur le directeur général. Bon. Regardez ça. Oui. On va vous suivre. Ah, merci beaucoup. C'est gentil. Oh.
C'est brillant. Comme toujours.